Do we really think that our the recreational activities, what these guys are accustomed to, are going to be compromised for 3 months? I mean, somebody's got to say it. Somebody's got to say it. You really, really think they honor in a bubble for 3 months and are going to deprive? Somebody got to tell the truth.
Yeah! NBA Australia. Hey, young. That's right. It's NBA Australia. It's Wednesday. Wednesday, am I right? July 1st. Pinching a punch for the first day of the month, you diggets. And I'm your host, James Clements. I'm a writer sometimes. The Rolling Stone, Triple J, Junkie, Red Bull Mag, literally whoever else wants to pay me that sweet, sweet booze money here in Larry Armour Studios. Look, there's a full bin, there's a couple of boxes, and yeah, it's still a shit show. Old mate is just living in her own filth in here, I'll tell you what. Anyway, I would usually be letting you know who's doing what, where they're doing it, why they're doing it, who's doing it better than Lonzo Ball in the NBA today. But of course, it's been 112 days without NBA basketball, because the NBA suspended its season. So, bit brutal. Still, you know, just our run of fuck it Wednesdays, though. So, let's fuck it. We'll bring in another special guest this week. What do you reckon? How's that one? Yeah, we've had gold medal winners, NBA champions, platinum recording artists, AFL players, pro gamers. And today, we welcome on a TV star, radio host, and one of Australia's best known comedians, who's also a massive basketball nut, once hosted his very own basketball show on the telly. It's Dave Thornton. Yes! It's an awesome chat with Thorno. Really enjoyed this one. We get deep about radio hosting, comedy, and of course, hoops. It's really, really fun. I love it. Thorno's a great chat, so you'll love this too. Also going to jump back in the NBA Australia time machine real quick. Head to 2004. Yeah, I'll talk about that a bit later. A bit of Detroit Lakers for you, which is interesting. And we've got a fair bit of news to smash as well. The schedule is out for the seeding games. Plus, more blokes are pulled out of the restart. And we're going to do some yeah nahs and a top five. Top five games of this shortened end of the season. And that'll be it. We're also going to finish up with a brand new Daily Review. Put a smile on your dial in this Rona world. Nice one. All right, this one's episode 444 of NBA Australia. What do you reckon? Let's go!
This is Matthew Dellavedova and you're listening to NBA Australia.
Watch out for the Shaq attack!
Oh, you better! Better watch out for the attack of, you know, the virus that is a pandemic around the world. Jesus. Yeah. So we've got a fair few new cases of the coronavirus in the NBA. And we're going to start off today's show the way we start every show here at NBA Australia, with a daily, weekly whip around, as it were. Look, lots of news. Lots of news. First off the bat, there's been heaps about the decision being 10 years ago. ESPN have got a new short film backstory about it, which is really good, but it's actually the anniversary of it next week. So talking about LeBron James and the decision and how that all came together and what happened, I'm actually going to have a guest on next week and we're going to talk about it around the actual anniversary. I feel like ESPN were just like, well, we need something to fill the gap to talk about shit. How about we all get angry about the decision again right now? It's like, it's not even the anniversary just yet. Jesus. Anyway, so we'll do that next week. Talk about that at length. Because it's still very... It's weird that it's 10 years ago, isn't it? It feels like it's either 2 years ago or 20 fucking years ago, not 10. Anyway. So the big news... we've got lots and lots and lots of news, actually, this week, saying that it's some of it's good, some of it's bad. With the new rash of Rona cases have popped up. Spencer Dinwiddie. Spencil! He's got the Rona. DeAndre Jordan. He's going to stay at home in Brooklyn. Spencer's going to try to still make it to Orlando for the Brooklyn Nets. This week, we also learned that Jabari Parker was on the Sacramento Kings. And that he also has coronavirus. Jesus. Yeah. Jabari Parker being on the Kings is like, what? Huh? Shit, I don't remember that at all. And I do a daily NBA show. What the fuck? But we have had at least 15 positive tests reported around the league. Obviously, Spencer and DJ. We've had Kevin Durant. There's been 4-for-1 Western Conference playoff team, apparently. Two more for players on the Suns. Obviously, Nikola Jokic, Malcolm Brogdon. Three Kings, not the movie, with Marky Mark and Ice Cube. This is a very different Three Kings. Buddy Hield, Alex Len, and Jabari Parker. But fuck you. I would watch the shit out of that movie. You drop Buddy Hield, Alex Len, the Ukrainian stepladder, and Jabari Parker into, like, Kuwait and Iraq at the end of the Gulf War. I would watch the fuck out of that movie. Shit, yes. Derek Jones Jr. of Miami's also had it, at least. And David Griffin, GM El Presidente of the Pelicans, said that as an organization, they've had three players with positive tests as well, but won't tell people who it is. And there's another Indiana Pacer beside Malcolm Brogdon that Kevin Pritchard has said, yeah, look, hey, he hasn't made a decision if he wants to come to Orlando or not. That's up to him. So good call. Interestingly enough, the Nuggets have had to close down their team practice facility because of some positive tests with the traveling party. We all know that Mike Malone, the coach there in Denver, turns out he had it. He's like, fuck, turns out I had it. It's like, all right, cool. And weirdly enough, there's like a positivity test rate of the players that they have tested in the NBA that's actually lower than national average in the US. But at the same time, most things are lower than the national average in the US. You know, reading, literacy, positive tests of coronavirus, because fucking hell, it's a shit show over there. But yeah, 16 of 302 players that have been tested by last week had actually tested positive. So 16 out of 302 is 5.2% versus the national average, which has been 6.4% last week. So interesting. So we've also had Wilson Chandler drop out of joining the Nets. He obviously basically has a family that he wants to hang out with. So good on him. DeAndre Jordan, same sort of thing. Obviously, I mentioned Spencer Dinwiddie. They joined Davis Bertans, Trevor Reese, Avery Bradley, Big Willie, Cauley Stein style. Jalen Adams has been signed by the Blazers to replace Ariza, and Cam Payne has been signed by the Suns, which is pretty cool. He was absolutely tearing it up in the G League. Nice one. But the big news is the schedule. So this is the better news, because that was all like the sad news of like, oh shit, all the corona cases, all the positive corona cases, where you're sitting there going, fuck, is this season even going to happen if this keeps popping off? Well, the NBA are just rolling full steam ahead going, here's the schedule. These are when the teams are going to play. And you're like, oh, that's nice and optimistic, isn't it? So everyone's eight-game schedule is out, which is cool. We've got Jazz Pelicans and then Clippers Lakers on reopening night, which will be fucking gross. Love it. And then second night, we've got Grizz Blazers, which is a fucking barn burner. Celtics Bucks, which is radical, and Rockets Mavericks. Dude, if this actually happens, I'll be fucking beside myself after just 2 days. That's great. And then each night, we're going to have at least 5 games with a maximum of 7. And they will be playing them during the day, America time, which means some early fucking mornings for muggins over here. Jesus. Jimmy, what'd you do today? Oh, I got up at 2 a.m. to watch fucking Miami play Philly. Awesome. So look, this opening phase apparently finishes August 14. You got the play-in games for the playoffs, the series, August 15 and 16, then playoffs will begin August 17. We've also found out the Black Lives Matter will be painted on the sidelines of all three courts that they're going to use there in Disney World, which is great. And they're trying to figure out what players can and can't wear as messages on the backs of their jerseys, basically trying to come up with some ideas for, you know, racial equality messages, etc. But they are shying away from actually having, you know, the victims of police brutality on the back because, you know, some families who don't have their dearly departed family member on the back of one of those jerseys might feel, you know, left out. Which is, hey, I get it. It's also kind of weird to have a person who was brutally killed by police's name on the back of a jersey. And then it's just weird to have somebody else's name who was also killed by police, not, you know? So it seems like the NBA just like, I don't know if we want that. But anyway, look, there's lots of fun games coming up. We're going to talk about that in the top five. So how about we do that? All right, let's get into some yeah nahs though, shall we? Let's do a bit of that. Woo! All right, so this is interesting. With the scheduling, let's do some yeah nahs. Did the NBA totally 100% rig this so Zion gets into the playoffs? Yeah nah! Fuck yes, of course they did. Like, in a surprise twist, the Pelicans have the easiest remaining seeding schedule. What an amazing twist of fate that was. Seriously, they play the Jazz and the Clippers in their first two, and then New Orleans finish with six games consecutively against teams that are under 500. Not bad, not bad. So next one, is that a bad thing, Jimmy? Yeah, nah, fuck no. Because that's awesome. Look, if nothing else, if the Pelicans get close enough to the Grizz, we get a sweet playing game or series between the Grizz and Pelicans. Ja Morant versus Zion. Fuck yes. Hook that to my veins. And then if we get Zion in the actual playoffs, it'll likely be Lakers-Pelicans first round. And you know that the NBA is like, we're making money, 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 money. Fuck yes. Give me that. Come on. All right. Next up, is everyone else in the West outside of the Grizz and Pelicans fucked? Yeah, nah. Yeah. Look, apologies to PDX Pete and all the other Blazers fans out there, and friend of the program, Stav from Blue Juice with his Spurs fans. I don't know any Kings fans, and I might be the biggest Suns fan I know. But Spurs, Kings, Blazers, Suns, they're fucked. Make up 3.5 games and hope that the Pelicans fall apart and not force a play-in already with the Grizz? Just a bit much, you know? Especially with the Blazers sort of sitting there going, well, you know, we don't have a razor, but we've got Jalen. Oh, jeez. And Spurs without LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah. Speaking of which, though, did the Blazers get fucked over? Yeah, nah, kind of a bit. They've got to play the Celtics, Rockets, Nuggets, Clippers, Sixers, and Mavericks all in a row. That is literally a murderer's row of six teams that will just fucking destroy you. So, tough scene. Grizzlies, Pelicans, book it. All right. What about in the East? Can the Sixers jump up a few seeding spots? Yeah, I mean, feasibly. They've got the easiest schedule in the East, basically. But it's the Sixers, so watch them make it as hard as possible. They did, however, sign Ryan Rowdy Brockoff, which is the biggest news of the weekend, which is sick. Friend of the program, recurring guest, Ryan Rowdy Brockoff, now next to Big Simo Ben Simmons and Aussie Matisse Thybulle on the Sixers underneath the Australian national coach Brett Brown. What could possibly go wrong? Nah, it's great though. I'm stoked on this. This is great for Rowdy. It's great for the Sixers. They just needed shooting, 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 and they've got one of the best shooters in the NBA, so that's great. The tricky thing for the Sixers is I think Indiana will probably slip a little bit, and I feel like Miami have got a very hard schedule, so the Sixers could feasibly jump up into the 4-5 matchup, and look, it's fine as long as they're sitting there going, well, it'd be nice not to play Boston in the first round. I reckon that's what they want to avoid. Even though they've kicked their ass, I think, this season series, but still, I don't know if they want that. Nice one. And with all the news about Wilson Chandler and DeAndre, are the Nets toast? Yeah, nah. Look, without Spencer Dinwiddie, yeah, they are. Look, they at least had a fighting chance, maybe, of just staying in the seven spot and then getting fucking killed. Like, get straight killed by the Raps. Straight killed by the Raps. Or Celtics, if the Celtics force their way up to the two. But look, without DJ, without Spencer Dinwiddie, without Wilson Chandler, no chance. So will they drop out of the top eight and out of the playoffs? Yeah, nah. Well, this is the saving grace, I guess, for the Nets. They're so fucking lucky that the Wizards are more shit than, like, the BFL team that our old PE teacher Mapes played for when we were in high school. They never won a game for, like, 4 years. So there's too many to make it all the way back, I think, for the Wiz and actually force at least even a playing game against the Nets if they drop to the eight. So, look, they should still make the playoffs, but they're still fucked. Tell you what. All right, but top five season. What do you reckon? Should we do that? Top five season! All right, top five season. Top five for this week is top five slash 10 games of the reopen. What do you reckon? Are you excited? You're going to be sitting there with fucking popcorn at 3 a.m.? No, it'll be like, I don't know, 8 a.m. July 31 our time. It'll be interesting. But all the games that have been announced, I'm pretty excited about a bunch of them, obviously. Honorable mentions. Look, the Bucks can't really miss out on the number one seed in the East, so it's not really that interesting to watch too many of their games. So I don't think any of those made the top five. But honorable mention to see how the Bucks go up against the Rockets. August 2, that's Giannis versus Harden. Bit of MVP action. Bucks versus Miami, August 6th, will also be interesting because Miami may or may not really desperately need this in terms of seeding. And Bucks-Toronto will be interesting as well, August 10. But obviously big ones as well. Pelicans-Clippers, August 1 will be a rip-snorter. Orlando-Brooklyn, August 11, also honorable matchup. Honorable matchup mentioned, there you go. Because that could finalize seeding for the East, really. But number 5 in the top 5-10 games of this reopen, Denver versus OKC. August 3rd, unreal. Skinny Rona Jokic, Nikola Jokic, hello. Fascinating to see what happens with Skinny Rona Jokic. The Nugs are an eternal question. And now, there's just some big Serbian questions hanging over their heads. Like, he's skinny. What's going to happen? And OKC, they're one of the most fascinating teams in this restart. Who knows what the fuck's going to happen there? Denver, are they going to jump up? Are they going to challenge the Clippers for the two seed? Are they going to drop all the way down? Who fucking knows? Fascinating. Number 4, Blazers. Their first game back is against the Grizzlies. Fascinating. This is going to be incredible just to see if the Blazers have a hope in hell or not, because it's almost like from the jump. You've got Dame Lillard versus Ja Morant. If the Blazers literally drop this one, though, they're pretty much dunskies, because the Grizz will have already gotten, you know, one extra win. Blazers drop one further back. Best of luck, you know, leapfrogging the Pelicans and forcing a play-in at that point. So, pretty crucial, I reckon. Jesus. Raptors versus Boston, August 7. Potential East semi matchup. Boston have a ways to go to catch the Raptors for the two seed anyway. You know, that's basically just depending on who they want to play in the first round more so than anything. But Raps-Boston, we've not really had that as a proper playoff series, so we'd love to see that happen in the East. It'll be cool to get a bit of a preview. August 7. Don't forget, Raps are really good, and so are fucking Boston. Grizzlies Pelicans is number 2. August 3, Zion versus Ja. We just mentioned swing games when it comes to Blazers Grizz. Grizz Pelicans is like the ultimate one. Pelicans are the closest, well, within basically spitting distance of the Grizzlies for the 8 seed. Most likely play-in competitors. Zion versus Ja, August 3. Hook that up to my veins. And of course, number 1. Clippers, Lakers, reopening night. That'll be ripper. I mean, LeBron James, Kawhi, Paul George, Anthony Davis. It'll have everything. Yeah, nice. But what about the Aussie highlights? Bangers versus Rowdy, Simo, and Aussie Matisse on August 11. That'll be fun. Suns taking on the old Sixers. Simo, Rowdy, and Matisse versus Patty, August 3. Sixers, Spurs will be good. Jazz Spurs, August 7 and 13. Jingles versus Patty. Should be good. But yeah, so we've dramatically, and this like rams home the point that we have lost Kangaroo Kobe, Dante Exum, King Dally, Kung Fu Thon, Jonah. But oh well, we've still got enough Aussies there. Make it fun. Wicked. All right. Anyway, let's jump in the time machine quickly, and then we'll go to Dave Thornton. What do you reckon? All right, Jimmy, can you pull this one off? Let's find out. NBA Australia Time Machine. Oh, yeah. NBA Australia. How you going? June 13, 2004. What do you reckon about that? Jimmy, why'd you choose 2004? Well, I was talking about, you know, I think we chat about it with Thorno, about, you know, the idea of people losing interest in the mid-thousands, well, early in mid-thousands. Shaq, Kobe, you're not seeing much NBA on TV in Australia. But, you know, those 2004 Pistons are an iconic team. The old no superstar title winners, and this is game 4, so they go up 3-1 in this series. They win this game, 88-80, do the Pistons. All 4 games, weirdly enough, start the same way with a jump ball violation, which is fucking hilarious. But weirdly enough, this game, you've got Al Michaels on the call with Doc Rivers, and it's just very bracing to listen to it now. You're like, it's Al Michaels. It's Sunday Night Football on NBC. Where's Chris Collinsworth? Instead, it's Doc Rivers. Doc's actually amazingly good. It's just before he takes the job with the Boston Celtics as their coach, having been shit canned by Orlando. And Al, look, Al's great at calling hockey. He's great at calling football. I'm not going to say he's great when it comes to basketball. You know, it just sort of shows you that for all the shit we give Marv Albert, he wasn't too bad. It's pretty weird, Al. Yeah. Anyway, look, Shaq's unstoppable in this game. They throw everyone at him to the Pistons. But the reason the Pistons win is because Kobe stinks, because they lock down literally everybody else but Shaq. Rasheed Wallace is absolutely great. Hits a free throw line jumper with about a minute left that just buries the Lakers. Chauncey Billups is a bad MF-er in this game too, and obviously ends up winning the finals MVP. But look, for the game, it's a slugfest. There's a lot of missed shots. The Lakers, both teams shoot 42%, and the Lakers go 7 of 25 from 3. The Pistons go worse. They go 2 of 13. But they go to the free throw line 41 times, go 28 of 41 versus 11 of 22 for the Lakers. That's where the game's basically won. Pistons just sort of control the tempo all game. Don't let the Lakers jump out on top of them. Keep a lid on Kobe and Gary Payton. Karl Malone gets hurt. Well, basically, Karl Malone's just done at this point. Doesn't play in game 5. And look, Shaq goes 36 and 20. Has an incredible game. Kobe has 20 points on 25 shots.
Kobe!
8 of 25 he shoots. Yeah, tell you what. Yes, not great. Gary Payton has 8 points on 4 of 11 shooting with 5 assists. Brutal. And Karl Malone only has 2 points in 21 minutes with a bung knee. Devion George, sure, he's the other starter, which is telling you a lot about this Lakers team at this point. Look, they've won 3 titles at this point. They miss out on the finals the year before. You've got a older Derek Fisher, substantially older Rick Fox. Fish goes 1 of 6. Rick Fox goes 1 of 10. And Stanislav Medvedenko, yellow, goes 1 of 5. And look, that's it. That's basically the game. The Lakers bench just can't do a fucking thing in this game. They combine to hit 3 shots of 17 attempts. And that'll do it. When Kobe's going 8 of 25 and your bench goes 3 of 17, yeah, it's over. Pistons, I mentioned Sheed. He was incredible. 26 points, 13 rebounds. Back when Sheed could actually rebound. Jesus, tell you what, when needed. He's great. Just absolutely great. Shoots 10 of 23, but is just dominant. Chauncey has 23 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. He's really fucking good too. 7 of 12 shooting for Chauncey. Rip Hamilton has 17 points and 6 assists. Tayshaun Prince, 6 points, 7 rebounds. Ben Wallace, 8 points, 13 rebounds. But just the way they share the ball, the way they move it, the way that they basically have a sort of, you have a point of an attack that could come from anywhere, and the other members of the team are just sort of all moving in coherent fashion with like the idea of like, oh, it doesn't matter who takes the shot as long as it's a really fucking good one. And the Pistons just bury them with decent shooting and really, really well thought out basketball. It's incredible to watch. So you can go back and watch this one. Eldon Campbell gets out there for 13 minutes as a stinker, but still. Mike James, he's goes 2 of 2 when he runs onto the court for 4 minutes. Lindsey Hunter's out there for a bit. But either way, look, the Pistons just out-execute, and it's a bit of a, not as much of a laugher as Game 5 is, because Game 5 is a blowout, and the entire second half is a laugher. The Lakers just completely fall apart. And this is the Lakers on their last legs. This is the end of the Shaq-Kobe Lakers. Next year, Shaq's on the fucking Heat, and he goes out like a fucking, you know, big man. It's awesome, whereas Kobe is just, this is the year of Colorado, and there's a lot going on in his life, obviously. And you can very much tell in this final series. But this team is just running on fumes. And for them to have made it this far, you know, you've got Payton, you've got Malone, but just injuries, age, just rack themselves up, and a bit too much for the Lakers to get over the hump with. So Pistons, great win in this one. Go up 3-1. And it is weird when they talk about no one has ever come back from 3-1 in a finals. And it's like, oh yeah, that was a big deal when it finally happened 12 years later. But it's pretty cool. And look, this is an interesting sort of look back at the NBA in 2004. And when Thorno and I sort of talk about this, you wonder why people sort of weren't entirely jazzed about some of these mid-thousands finals. I mean, the call is pretty bad. Like, the energy is just fucking brutal. I don't mind the throwback Pistons courts. It's a good uniform matchup. But just the way that arena was lit, the palace and the vibe of the actual presentation of the game, it just lacks energy. And you sort of watch newer ones in the last probably 10 years, 15 years, well, 10, 12 years. I want to say, there was just such a fucking crazy vibe about Celtics-Lakers, whereas this, Pistons-Lakers, it just, not anywhere near the same. And it's only like a four-year difference. So, yeah, you've got to hand it to Mike Breen and ABC, etc., really turning the finals into just like an absolute spectacle, whereas in 04, this is just a bit of a rough watch, I'll tell you. And, I've been watching 2010, so that's a bit of a spoiler alert for next week. But just like the way that's presented is just so much more energetic and just like fucking yes than this one was. So anyway, but it's a fascinating series regardless. So let's do an NBA Australia Pro performance of the night for this game.
That's a knife.
Shaq. I mean, I mentioned Sheed, 26 points, 13 rebounds. He's awesome, but Shaq is unfucking stoppable. Goes 16 of 21 in this game. Absolutely incredible. 36 points, 20 rebounds. He's got 16 rebounds halfway through the third quarter. Two assists and a block. They do actually keep talking about Hacker Shaq. And you do remember, it's like, this was a blight on the game too. 4 of 11 from the free throw line goes the big fella. Tough scenes, but, I mean, this is part of the Pistons. They're like, look, we've got Sheed. We've got Ben Wallace. We can throw big dudes at this guy. But at the same time, let's just make sure that we absolutely fucking close out, shut down Kobe, Gary Payton, Devion George, Fisher, Fox, etc., who could hurt us. And they do. And they just let Shaq sort of work. And Shaq does it. Good stuff. Spud of the night.
Spud of the night.
Kobe. Yeah. Look, 8 of 25. You know, oh, Jimmy, it's not that bad. It's like, yeah, it's not that bad because he'd actually go on to win... 8 of 25. He went on to win a Finals MVP in 2010, shooting worse than that. So really, but 0 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 turnovers. This is just a bad Kobe, and would really sort of be the nail of the. He's selfish, and it's going to be his way or the highway kind of vibes that would basically go for the next half decade. Until he wins the title in 09 with Pau Gasol and co. But also the rest of the Lakers were fucking giant spuds on this night. I mentioned Derek Fisher 1 of 6, Rick Fox 1 of 4, Medvedenko 1 of 5, the bench going 3 of 17 combined. Just fucking brutal. So not great, fellas. Not great. But Kobe 8 of 25. Remember 6 of 24 in 2010, wins the Finals MVP. So still. Anyway. Rest in peace, Big Fella. Rest in peace. Better than Lonzo Ball for this game?
Lonzo was the best player in high school. He was the best player in college. You think you're going to get to the pros and be like, I made it to the pros. Now I can be average. We're coming for everybody.
Coming for everybody. Ah, it's the bloke that ended up being Lonzo Ball's coach. Not the coach that Lonzo Ball's dad wanted, but Luke Walton. 0 of 1 in 12 minutes, 21 seconds, and had 6 fouls. What? How do you foul out in 12 minutes, Luke? What the fuck? 1 rebound, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 6 fouls. Thing is, that's 1 rebound, 3 assists, and 2 steals more than Lonzo Ball's ever had in an NBA Finals or playoff game. So, yeah, there you go. Because Lonzo's never made it. Makes sense. All right, let's take a break and go to our hangout with Dave Thornton. It's a ripper chat. You'll enjoy this. And as mentioned, 2010 Finals will be the time machine for next week. So, if you want to catch up, plenty of those games on YouTube. etc. So anyway, let's listen to Creaky and then Thorno.
This is Miss Creek, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
All right, I promised him at the top of the show, he is, a former Brekkie and random other times of the day radio host. You might have heard him in the olden days hanging out with Fev and Fifi Box and shit. But the thing is, you might have seen him on The Project or fucking House Husbands, Upper Middle Bogan, Husey, We Have a Problem, The Beep Test, Kinney Tonight, fucking literally every other TV show under the sun. He's also got like 87 different podcasts, but the one I've been enjoying, it's his latest one. There will be a test. What is there? The Cheap Seats Dave and Bob cast as well? Anyway, there's also been a million comedy shows that he's done. Maybe you'll just see him getting a haircut somewhere in Brunswick. It's bloody Dave Thornton. Dave! Thorno, how you going?
James, I'm good. You got me both up and about because I was like, well, I didn't realise I did so much crap in my life. But then also, somewhat sad now that COVID's hit and none of that is happening anymore. But, mate, it's true. We kind of live in the same hood, don't we? We're in Moreland, which is the District 9 of the moment of COVID-19, isn't it?
It really is. I've been calling the baby a prawn, working on my South African accent. It's been going great. The thing is, so we had to reschedule this yesterday because the People's Republic of Moreland decided to shut down my street and replace all of the fucking power lines literally outside of Larry Armour Studios. So, thanks a lot. Killing me, council. Killing me. Anyway.
Brutal. Isn't it funny during COVID-19 that you can put a high-vis on and that's fine. You can work. The CMFEU has somehow come together to beat COVID. You can keep working if you're a construction worker.
If I put on a high-vis, I could literally just walk down the street and just start hugging people and no one would bat a fucking eyelid. Like, just I'd lick my hand, just slap him on the head and shit. It'd be fuck. You can do – it's literally a passport to do whatever the fuck you want. There was no social distancing on my street yesterday. You know, they're all smashing down chalky milks and eating pies from down the street. So, good on them.
I know, and not that you would want to do it, but you could wipe out the entire industry by just getting someone with COVID to lick a shitty and stuffing it in a roll. Be done for.
I love it. Alrighto. So, look, the usual guff when we have guests on NBA Australia is to talk a bit of hoops, talk a bit of career action. You're probably about the fifth or sixth most decorated basketball player we've had on the show, following our recent rash of NBL players and stuff like that. But you grew up in Detroit, so a fellow regional Victorian. What was Detroit like growing up, Dave? Because I grew up in Ballarat, so Detroit was the big smoke to us, which is fucking hilarious.
I felt like it was the opposite for us. I went to Ballarat like it was Paris because it was Sovereign Hill and that was enough for me to just think, wow, I've hit the big time. You get it. What are they, big towns, small cities? Who knows? But it's somewhere in between. And it was actually in Geelong that I first got my basketball Jones because I distinctly remember this. It was 1989. My dad's mate, who ran West Fines Cars. So when you're a car dealership, you can become a major sponsor of an NBL team.
That's courtside action. Holy shit. You might own the fucking team in the late 80s. God damn.
That's exactly right. I mean, I've heard Sean Marion owns the New Zealand Breakers. I'm like, well, it's come a long way. You could just be a car dealer in the arse end of Geelong and you could be the power broker that Sean Marion is now. But I remember I saw the Supercats play, I believe it was either the South Melbourne Saints or could have been the Eastside Spectres. One of those. Four, what I gathered was the wooden spoon because Geelong sucked. And yet I still was like, I'm on board. This is awesome.
Love it.
This is better than sitting in the outer at Cadinia Park. It's warmer and it just feels, and I think it's high scoring. So, yeah, I was on board from then.
I'm pretty sure that's exactly why I got into basketball as well, because Ballarat's even colder than Geelong. And fuck sitting outside watching or playing footy in the middle of winter when you could actually be at least in a giant fucking shed, not freezing your ass off. Doesn't matter if you're watching or playing, whatever.
Yeah, do you remember... And even like, you know, we would have played about the same time when you had shorts down to the middle of your shins. And at least that much coverage in the middle of a cold Victorian winter is better than those tidy whities that you had to wear in under 15s.
Yeah, my excuse is I got knocked out too many times playing football. So I just, leaned into my Jason Kidd-esque point guard career. And I clearly never looked back. But I hear on the shorts, I've still got like my old fucking shorts. And Detroit, was it CC Records and Tapes in Geelong? I feel like it was CC Records. Yeah, I feel like this was like a hint of a little mecca on the odd occasion. Because, I mean, we had Ballarat Records and Tapes. And we had Brashes. And we didn't have much else in Ballarat. So I remember, all right, cool. And
Brashes.
I remember fucking Geelong. It's like, yeah, CC, let's go. Bought like a fucking, I think I bought my first Blink-182 album. Was it Cheshire Cat there? Anyway, so getting your start in comedy and everything. So Geelong, you kicked it off Raw Comedy, I assume, in like the thousands, right? That was basically the biggest pathway to doing stuff in comedy, yeah?
Yeah, man. It was like you always do interviews and people say, how did you start? As if there's going to be some mystical story, you know? Like,
well, I was spotted on the street and someone saw that I was going to be funny and they put me on stage. What? Get the fuck out of here.
That's what I sometimes say that to people. I was like, I was actually an infant who was just sent along in a wicker basket down the Barrabool River and then a temple of comedy found me and they took me in to say I was the chosen one. It was set in the scrolls. No, that's exactly it, man. I did Raw Comedy down at GPAC, Geelong Performing Arts Centre, and then sucked so hard. And then, so I've just realised through this, my two passions of basketball and stand-up comedy were not good, so which I don't know what kind of psyche then says, yeah, that's for me.
I love it. So, it's the setting yourself up for just constant disappointment and failure is like right there. It's perfect. That's comedy, right?
That's exactly it. That's what I'm finding COVID so comfortable. The disappointment and failure.
Love it. What jobs did you work while you were trying to make comedy actually happen?
I used to be a graphic designer.
Yeah, and weirdly enough, in basketball, like I used to always do that when I was a kid, like all through graphic design, I used to be, you know, because I think there's a drawing behind you, the listeners can't see it, of Mr. Cooper wearing his Warriors jersey, who, weirdly enough, Mark Curry, I did gigs with him in South Africa.
Shit. Like in South Africa? Early. Fucking hell.
Yeah, and I kind of had to pull back. Like, you know, you're like, hey, Mark Cooper, nice to meet you. As my head's exploding, I'm like, you're hanging with Mr. Cooper. This is sick. And I was trying to be cool. But yeah, that was a roundabout way of trying to say I did graphic design at Gordon Institute of TAFE. Not to brag too much, mate.
So this is almost two back-to-back weeks of TAFE students. We had Goxie. Oh, that was, I guess, 2 weeks ago that we had Goxie on, currently studying bricklaying at TAFE. And now we've got a TAFE graduate. So look, we're moving up. This is pretty good.
I never knew Goxie and I would fit together on a Venn diagram, but it's good to know. Next time I see him, there'll be mutual TAFE elbows for each other.
Yeah, his stories of being the mature age student at TAFE is just fucking bang on.
Yeah, the old guy TAFE is the same as the old guy at a hostel. You're like, okay.
How was the divorce? The divorce was pretty hard on you, huh? Jesus.
Yeah. Like I said, there's two distinct roads there. Things have gone not great, and this is like how Stella got a groove back. Maybe you're finding yourself again, which is lovely, or you never found yourself, and you're still swilling around in that pint and cheap liquor.
So as a graphic designer, I'm surprised we never had you working at Beat when I was, you know, working there throughout the thousands and then.
Okay, yeah, no, man, now in hindsight, mate, now that COVID's on, I can totally do it, I'm back.
Jump on the old dog and bone, call up Beat magazine.
But, oh man, I just did odds and ends and then stand-up started taking over, which meant so did the late nights. And it's hard to be. It's hard when you don't hit a deadline by saying, I was just really hungover because I had heaps of drink cards last night. What was I going to do with that?
So that was it was like one of the weird saving graces of, because I don't know, most of the listeners know that I was the editor of Beat for fucking years. But then the best part was on Mondays when it was deadline, Monday's a great day for a deadline. Monday deadline, knocked it over. Then you can chill out at least Tuesday, Wednesday, roll into the rest of the week. But the part of that was we had like six graphic designers who'd work just that one day on Monday and they'd all be band members. I feel like comedian is like the ideal one as well. Like it's a Monday day evening and away you go. You've been laughing, but oh well, missed opportunities, Dave, missed opportunities.
I know. Everything that you just spoke about though reminds me of breakfast radio where it was a similar thing. You'd finish at 9, you might have a meeting and then you're free. So from 10 a.m. to about 2, 3 p.m., I'm like, oh, how good is this? Everyone's working and I got the rest of the day, but then the fear would sink in at night time. You're like, what are we doing tomorrow? What happened? And you're looking at the news like it's a pokey machine. You're hoping something will pop up. And you're just hoping some misery will pop up that you can talk about. You know,
yeah.
There were things of like when Trump got voted in, there's part of it, it's like, oh, the world is doomed. But you're like, oh, my job might be easier. And it was for a while until the sadness
really kicked in then. I mean, I was literally about to move into talking about radio stuff. Always sort of a thing that you're like, well, I've seen other Australian comedians turn comedy into a really good, lucrative radio gig. Is it like almost one of the sort of end, like it's basically radio and TV for an Australian comedian almost seems like, right? Like everyone sort of ends up there if they're good. And it's like where you sort of end up being pushed towards.
Yeah. I mean, I always grew up, you know, loving radio and stuff. Actually, I talked to Fifi about it because she was on the Shebang with Marty Sheargold. I was like, I used to love that. And then Martin Malloy and all those things. And so it was great. And I like it, but it's a funny now weird cross-section because old media is now weirded out, obviously, by new media. And then there's a bit now. A trajectory of a comedian wouldn't look the same. And I would say I'd be one of the last of my generation to have that. Okay, now you do a bit of breakfast radio and then you do TV. Not the TV's still there, but it's kind of funny now because kids will go off in a different direction. They'll start making stuff online. They'll do things like this, like a podcast or something,
yep,
as opposed to that. And so yeah, it was – well, I mean, I'm sure other kids will come through, but it's not as – that was – it won't be just that single track anymore.
Yep. I mean, with that in mind, how hard is it to be funny at like 6:30 in the morning?
James, man, I never got used to it. I never got used to the hours. And I love sleep and I hate mornings. And it never really agreed with me because, and I can understand now the times that you, like I grew up on The Simpsons, and you know, every time that they depicted any radio jocks, they were like, all right, okay, let's go, all right, okay. And I can understand why that is now because you're faking it till you make it. Like if you were being honest with yourself, you're like, hey guys, 131060, who kind of wants to kill themselves right now? Call in. Because you're just so tired and so over it that, yeah, you didn't want to be. So you're faking it. And everything's great. Everything's great. I'm not tired out of my mind. I've not just been buzzing now off six coffees and that shit one that I got from the 7-Eleven on the way in. You know, and so you're pushed, and I remember all the veins in my forehead were just becoming more prominent. It's obviously my brain was just trying to chug thoughts through my skull at a very unlivable hour.
Yeah,
that's why you get paid for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit tough to be like, all right, so who else decided not to run into that pylon on the drive into work today? That sort of stuff, you know.
Man, I've talked to other people who are on breakfast radio. Adam Richard, I talked about this, Claire Hooper, where we said the amount of times, and this is a very dark thought, but you'll be driving in thinking, is there any way I could, obviously I don't want to do harm to myself, but if there's any way I could possibly just do enough to give myself 2 weeks off, is there any, like, would a broken wrist be kind of like, this can't come in, guys, like you just want to sleep and have some time to yourself, collect your thoughts.
I love it. Yeah, it's like the old shooting yourself in the foot to get out of like, you know, it's like, what was it, Catch 22? They sort of basically revolves around Yossarian trying to figure out how to basically not go to the front and fight in the war. It's like, I don't want to work really, but I still want to get paid.
Well, I know we went overseas one time for like this weird Disneyland junket thing that I don't even know how it still happened. And because of the time difference, it's 2 PM there. And I know Carl Sanderlands does that where he lives in LA for a lot of the time. And I'm like, oh, this makes so much more sense to have an exchange program like that where you're in a different time zone. You can wake up and be like, hey, I'm feeling great now, even though everyone's just waking up. And so I was really pushing, is there any way I can live in LA, guys? Is there any way? And as you can tell by our conversation at the start of this podcast, I'm still living in Brunswick, so I didn't have enough sway to pull that off, James.
It's tough, man. The ins and outs of actual commercial radio, it does seem like it's a pretty bloodthirsty business. I feel like if you're not an ex-footballer, it's got to seem pretty fucking tough on the outside, right? Like sort of breaking into it and then staying there.
Yeah. It's a weird world of complex situations because you're tired You get your ratings through once every 12 weeks, which is really odd. The inexact science, this is what I'll tell people who are listening, this is how it works, is that random people get selected just because of their demographic, because you're a certain age and maybe your family's got a certain setup. You've got two kids and a dog and they're like, oh, yeah, you're right between the eyes of the people that we think represent the demographic, so we've just plucked you out of the ether. Can you fill out this book at the end of every week to tell us what your listening habits were? And it's a book with a pen in it, and you literally go, oh, yeah, I think I listened in the morning to Nova and then I listened to Fox, I think. And they fill it out during the week. And even at that point during the week, you could be a couple of beers in and you say, I'm going to throw a spanner in the works. I listen to Christian rock radio every morning. And that's supposed to represent tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. And every 12 weeks you get that book through and they say, okay, you did well. And that's how inexact the science is. So it's not like, you know, Cole Trickle from Days of Thunder where he cuts 500 laps and then and then he does 500 laps like his boss tells him to, and they go, look at the difference in the tyres. I can tell you how to race. You'll make this through. You'll win the Indy 500. It's just you get thrown this book, and they go, oh, yeah, they didn't like you over these last 12 weeks. Like, why? Like, don't know. So, yeah, we're going to change stuff. You know, like, change what? You don't even know what was supposed to go wrong or right. And then so it's a really strange place to be.
It reminds me of, like, in primary school where you'd have to, like, you know, for, like, a 2 or 3 week period or something, you'd have to like track whenever you did like, you know, maybe activity or you went for a walk or something like that. And then you just fucking plumb forgot about it after like a day and a half. And then 3 weeks later, you're just like remembering 3 weeks. Oh, no, just making shit up 100% of the time going, no, I definitely took the dog for a walk then. Dad made me take out the fucking rubbish bins and all this sort of shit. Basically, you'd be making it up, pulling it out of your ass. And the fact that that's what radio ratings are based on is fucking wild. At least with podcasts. I know that NBA Australia gets X amount of fucking downloads per week or month or whatever. That's fucking crazy, man.
Oh, man. And some of the thinking that goes behind it was just insane. You were just, half the time, you're going, I don't know if this makes any sense. Because, you know, I'd have meetings where guys would just be going, oh, yeah, so people are on TikTok, so yeah, we should do that. I don't know if that just
cool.
What does that sentence mean? That's a different medium. We're on different mediums. I don't understand. And I remember at one stage, because they're obsessed with then the online thing, because you said with podcasts, you can see when you were doing it daily and now that you're doing it weekly, how many listeners you've got, and you go, okay, that one got really good listenership. That's maybe because of the guests, maybe because of the content, whatever it is. That one not so much. I'm gaining listeners, this is going in the right direction. With them, they're just trying to figure it all out. And I know because the online world, they're so specific on listeners and how many, if you're on YouTube, you can see how many views you have and all that kind of stuff, how many subscribers you have, that they got obsessed with this sketch group online. I think they were from America, that they said, we want them associated with our brand. And I was like, are they on air? They're just like, no, they're just a brand that people recognize. I'm like, do they? And then they put these girls on billboards and I was like, people think they're one of the radio teams. Like, no. People know them as these sketch artists on YouTube. I'm like, what have they got to do with our radio show or any of our radio stations? Like, oh, it's the cool. It's meeting up the brands. I'm like, you've gone insane. These people have gone insane. And so you're working with that as well, and they're not getting the listeners they used to because people are now listening to podcasts and listening to all this other stuff. So, man, it was a really strange time.
That's wild. I mean, you also end up working with Fev. Did you ever get to play basketball against Fev?
Man, he is a natural athlete. Like, he is – it is crazy. Like, I used to joke, his thighs are honestly the size of one of mine. Like, he is honestly a naturally gifted guy. And I remember – I don't think we've ever played basketball together. We kind of shot around and stuff. We didn't play a game. But I remember we played this mixed netball game before. I think if it wasn't an international, it was like a pretty big netball game. And Fit, of course – being the goal kicker, is just like, no, I'm goal shooter. And I'm like, why are you goal shooter? He's like, because that's what I am, man. In every sport, I have to be the goal. I have to be the one who scores. And I was like, man, that ego doesn't go away. He's just always, that's who I am. If I'm not getting the glory, I'm not doing anything.
Checks out. I mean, that's, you know, that's why I played footy for so long and was so good, I guess. And I mean, because I was at a thing with Fev, like I know last year, literally talking mid-sentence. Basketball rolls over, he picks it up and goes, watch this, half-court shot, and nailed it. from fucking half court. He just called it and he fucking hit it. I nearly fucking died, Dave. I was just like fucking, what just happened? There's like a fucking room, like a basketball court full of people. Fev's just hit a fucking half court shot. I'm dying fucking laughing, rolling around. And he just sort of shrugs and he's like, yeah. I'm like, what? Like, holy shit, what a moment.
Man, he's... And to his own admission, he just says, yeah, I was so naturally gifted, I didn't really try that hard.
You could barely tell.
He's got this great story of, I think it's Wayne Britton, isn't it? It was the coach before Dennis Pagan. And I know because of Carlton, they've got to run around Princess Park, which is just over 3Ks. And then you usually do 3K time trials around that. And if you get under 12 minutes, you're good. 11, you're getting really good. Under 10, you're absolutely elite for running and for AFL. And Fev would just stroll in at, I think, 13 minutes or 13 and a half minutes, 14 minutes. Because he's like, man, we're full forward. How much have we got to run? And Wayne Britton was like, you won't get a game if you don't run in under 11 minutes. And then he said, you know, next time. So he told me that. I was like, right, locked in, did 11 minutes. I said, did you? He goes, yeah, he didn't know. I just cut off the back end and ran across the field.
And the shortcut. Fucking love it. That's great. I'm actually curious, like, because there's, like, just, I feel like there's an ideal number of people for, like, shows. And, I mean, like, with, when you were on with Fev, it was, like, Fev, you, Fifi, and Byron, wasn't it?
Byron. Yeah.
I feel like as soon as you get above three, it's just a shit show. And it's my idea for commentary as well. Like, I can barely listen to football now. Even though I fucking love it, because it's literally just, it's basically table tennis between 5-6 different people and nothing actually gets called, nothing actually gets said. It's like, oh, what do you reckon happened there, Lingy? Oh, I don't know, Duck, what do you reckon? Sure thing, Rui. Oh, look at this, BT. And it's like, that's literally all it is. It becomes about not really actually saying much or giving insight. It's about setting up the next person for the next point and then them setting up the next person. I reckon you just need play-by-play, special comments, boundary reporter, and away we go, right? Like, and I feel like radio is similar where if you're bouncing across too much stuff, not much actually gets said. I have a bugbear about this when it comes to basketball too. Like, even like people fucking love Jeff Van Gundy, Mark Jackson, and Mike Breen. I think that's getting a little bit fucking tired and old because now it's just two old people yelling and moaning about shit and Mike Breen being an amazing play-by-play caller. So I feel like there's like an optimal number. What do you reckon?
I agree with you there, Mike. I think Mike Breen is incredible. And sometimes when I hear him with Walt Frazier watching a New York game, and because Walt Frazier's got this obsession with rhyming through his whole every, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the turns and phrases.
He's making and percolating. He's incredible.
And then Mike Breen's like, okay, I'm going to be the spine here. And I will concede the guys get out of the way when it's Mike's time. Like the amount of great plays that have happened and you've got Mike Breen over the top, bang, giving all these commentary, which is good. But I agree with you. It's now Jeff Van Gundy thinking about new rule changes when there's 3 minutes left in a game. It's like a really important game and he's just like, there should be no cross court. And you're like, now's not the time to workshop, JBG.
not an idea to workshop your takes right now. Like, let's just...
I know. Mark Jackson, unfortunately, has the same cadence as Chris Webber. Well, it kills me when he's just always like, when every syllable has to be important. He dribbles down the court, stands at the three-point line and passes it into the post. It's like, I mean, you're not reading scriptures. You're not. This isn't the most important thing you've ever said. Say it with a normal cadence.
The Reverend Mark Jackson. Yeah, Chris Webber, like, it's like, Chris, you're an engaging dude. Don't overthink it sometimes, you know? Anyway,
I wholeheartedly agree with you in those situations. But sometimes, in saying that though, Jalen Rose, he's got a bit of that, but I actually love listening to Jalen because his takes, I'm always like, yeah, good call, Jalen.
Nailed it. Let's do some hoop stuff. All right, how did you actually get into hoops beyond just the Geelong Supercats and watching Dante Exum's dad and early Shane Heal and whatnot? Like, were you similar to me and like our generation of like, all right, the explosion happens with MJ and the Bulls, etc.?
Yeah, I feel like, don't you think our age group, we're all these weird kind of refugees from football. Like, our fathers are all like, you know, you play football or do that kind of stuff. And then basketball came along and you're like, oh, because I think there's a lot of similarities. It's a 360-degree sport. It's high scoring. I know football's a bit more defensive. You've got defensive dudes and offensive dudes, but like in basketball, you play both. You kind of do that the same in football. Like, you know, a defender can be attacking or whatever. So I thought there was always similarities, and we all swung that way. And you know when you tell people who are like 20, you go, man, the NBL, you don't understand. In the 90s, it was Melbourne Park with close to 20,000 people losing their mind. You couldn't get a ticket. It was big. It was huge. At one stage, it was threatening to be the largest sport in the country. And then it's just like, by 1997, you're like, oh, what are we doing at the State Hockey and Netball Centre? What happened here? And I concede I drifted away from basketball because I played all through high school, played with my mates, we'd finish school, we'd go down to the playground, we'd play till the sun went down. It was just all about it. We were just watching inside NBA, whatever it was, you know, on a Saturday, you'd get your hour abridged game, which was usually a Bulls game. You'd just be playing the whole time through my teens. But then I kind of drifted away in my 20s and came back to it in my late 20s, kind of 30s.
It's a story as old as time, I feel like, Dave. This is almost literally, like, to a T, everyone I've spoken to about basketball fandom in Australia. Once Jordan retires a second time, 98, and you have the Shaq Kobe Lakers, there is like a real sort of lack of it on TV in Australia. And it's really fucking hard to follow because you don't have the internet like we do today. And I feel like as soon as like the late thousands, from about 2005, 2006, as soon as the internet started getting better, that's where a lot of people sort of came back to it. Like almost to a fucking T, this is what happened. And it's weird, but it's never been fucking stronger, I guess, at least the NBA. And in terms of NBL stuff, I mean, do you actually go to games here now?
Yeah, I go see United. I'll go play with them. Actually, I go with Fev. It was weird because before Fev and I knew each other and we worked together, he would be sitting courtside and I'd be sitting on the other courtside. There was a moment actually.
Fuck, it must be nice. Must be nice in the 1%. Jesus.
Yeah. Mate, when I told him I sat courtside with the Geelong Supercats, I'm like, what? He's got form.
Nice. But,
man, I remember a thing that they put up. I mean, obviously, if it. Especially for myself, I can't speak for Fair, but if I'm your kind of A-list celebrity putting the games on, you know, we are scraping the bottom of the barrel. But I remember there was a thing where they went, oh, these guys sitting courtside, they flashed a Fair, they showed highlights of Fair's, of him playing. And they're like, Brendan Favola's here.
Yeah.
And then they went, Dave Thornton's here. And you can hear this murmur of like, did he play for St Kilda in the 80s?
He was a ruck rover. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and the editor had clipped together a bit of my stand-up from the Melbourne Comedy Festival from one of the years. But it was like a setup. It wasn't even a punchline. It was like, it was just the setup. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that was the bit you pulled out. And my mate was like, that is the worst bit that they could have pulled out. And I start laughing. And then after they just show that setup, they throw to me. It looks like I'm pissing myself at the very average joke that was up on the video screen. And I'm like, good. This has worked out really well.
That's great. It's like, I'm the funniest man alive.
Yeah, I know. But, man, but the resurrection of the NBL, like the level, you know, like when you're seeing Chris Goulding run around and, like, he's an elite level player. And then they've done a good job of making it exciting. It's good to go down to it. You're seeing, you know, imports that you're like, this guy's legit, you know. Just, you know, they're almost scraping in on NBA level. And it's amazing they've resurrected it at a decent part because it was horrendous. I remember seeing the Tigers at the State Hockey and Netball Centre. And, man, I would, like, you could go down to MSAC and watch scores higher than that on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
Like, I understand the players were doing what they had to do and you are still at the behest of your the generation and the money that the league has and all that kind of stuff. And I'm not having a crack at the players, but the level wasn't great.
Yep. Yeah, they've done a great job. It's awesome. And I think, you know, it goes part and parcel with, you know, the growth of the game sort of globally, that there is at least, you know, a lot more grassroots support for it, I guess, now than there was easily, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, which is great. I mean, we had, like, buddies of ours from America. Like, you know, we lived over there for fucking ages. We moved back. They came to visit. We'd been to a million NBA games with them. And they're like, holy shit, this is like a cross between college and NBA, but if it was in a small town, smaller sort of town. And it's like, yeah, that's pretty much where it's at. It's fucking great. Like, we went to a derby, I think it was, like, the Southeast Melbourne Magic Phoenix and United. And it was fucking great.
Yeah.
We had a fucking hell of a time. Drank a million beers. Still not used to it. The 10-minute quarters still fucking throw me. I'm still not used to that. But, you know, it was a great fucking time. So, hey, good on them. They're going pretty well. So in terms of actual NBA games, how many have you been to?
Man, this is the bit that kills me. I've never seen an NBA game.
What?
I I know, because of my touring schedules and things like that, and the times I've been in America, almost every time it's been the spring. It's been September, and you couldn't be further from the last season and further from the next season. It's killed me. I've been at baseball games. I've been there. I've even contemplated while I was there to go to Vegas to see some preseason, sitting there in a sweat box watching some dude from the G League try to make it. But I went to the America Boomers game at Marvel Stadium, and I've done all that kind of stuff. But I'm yet to – my mate and I that I grew up with in high school, we said, oh, when we turn 40, we'll go to the NBA. But now we had kids, and then COVID hit, and I go, oh, this is shit. So –
brutal.
Genuinely, heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's like – it is really, really tough, and I still literally remember the fucking moment I walked into my first one, just like the years and years and years just built up in my head, and you actually sort of walk through – you're in a stadium and you're like, holy shit, like this is actually fucking for real. This is bonkers. And yeah, I feel like my first one was in actually in New York at MSG, which was pretty fucking crazy and pretty cool. But I mean, you know, always been a bit of a Knicks hater. So I was like, whatever, this is this is pretty nuts, but it's pretty, you know, still fuck the Knicks. And here we are, what, 15 years
really?
Later, still fuck the Knicks. But anyway,
that's, I mean, you know, they fuck themselves. I kind of, because when people do ask me, it's weird because, well, who's your team?
Well, you might be able to, can you see behind us? The Seattle Supersonics flag up on the wall. There's also a signed Sean Kemp poster, Rain Man poster on the opposite wall. And Larry Armour Studios, the NBA Australia Studios, are just littered with Seattle Supersonics paraphernalia. So, yeah. I don't really have a team, Dave. This is the problem. I'm a basketball...
Heartbreaking.
What is it? Agnostic. I understand that there's basketball, but I don't follow one.
Oh, man. Yeah. Because that's a weird thing. I got on to the Knicks when, with the Starks era and Charles Oakley, and I loved all those guys and the hard-ass players. And so, I mean, I guess I go for the Knicks. They're just so shit. They're just so shit. They're one of the most inept sides of any sport that I've witnessed, and it's just heartbreaking. Like, guys will ask me, why do you watch them? I'm like, this season's like, I don't. I look at that lineup and I'm like, why would I watch this shit?
So the thing when it comes to Knicks fandom is I've literally never met a happy with the progress of the team or franchise, rather, Knicks fan. Literally fucking, we lived in New York for 6 fucking years. I never met one Knick who's like, you know what? I'm really optimistic about this franchise. Like, it just never happens. It doesn't happen. Every fucking Knicks fan is just miserable and sad about the Knicks. Like, and they have been for 20 fucking years. It's crazy.
Oh, man, yeah, because it's so strange because you've got LA where free agents will say, yeah, I definitely want to be there. Of course, why wouldn't I? And New York is the largest city in the country. You know, the East Coast version, it's a media epicenter. It's the most... Didn't they say it's rated as the most expensive franchise in the NBA because of its fan base and all this? Well, probably the Lakers could be up there, but then, and it's just like, how can you be so shit? How can you be in this place which seems like all the smartest people in the country are flocking to your city and you can't find one of them to say, hey, we need to do X or Y to make this team good?
Yeah, it's tough. But hey,
and they constantly just have big swings, which is they overpay players, which I never got. You'd go, why are you overpaying them? You could say to them, hey, guess what? You can live in New York as opposed to Milwaukee. So which would you prefer? Oh, I prefer New York. Yeah, I thought so. So why don't you just come with us for a little bit cheaper?
Yeah, it's tough scenes. But I mean, look, Brooklyn, they did it smart. They did it right. They got Kyrie, they got KD, and it was because they weren't a fucking shit show of a franchise. So, you know?
100%. And then they're also, because, and they also must have that sell of just going, hey, guess what? You can be in this huge media market, but you don't have to be with the Knicks. And it's like, it's unbelievable. With all the heritage and all the fan base, it's still a net loss to join the Knicks.
100%. So with that in mind, who is/was your favorite NBA player?
Man, well, that's the weird thing because I went for the Knicks because I went against the grain because everyone loved the Bulls. I always tried to do something different. Like, I know my parents used to get annoyed because I had to do everything different. You know what I mean? Like when kids had a Coca-Cola yo-yo, I'd get a Fanny yo-yo just because you go, I need to do this. So that's kind of reason I went for the Knicks. But then also when I was young, Dominic Wilkins was my favorite because in the dunk comps, I liked him over Jordan. But that's when you're a kid and you realize, oh, possibly this guy puts up empty calories and doesn't win. But And then I did like, for the Bulls, I like Scottie Pippen because I just like the tall, like point forward. I'm trying to think now. I go through just all these different cycles of sometimes I'll just get fixated on a player and be like, oh yeah, that guy's sick. And then I get over him. Kind of like your agnostic fandom of NBA.
I mean, it's actually worked out great doing a fucking daily NBA show for 500 episodes, you know, not actually having the hang-up on your one specific team. Like, we had Brooklyn Nets season tickets for 5 years when we were in New York. And so I still have, you know, a little bit of, like, Nets fandom in my hat, but it's not like I'm going to sit there and fucking, like, break down their entire roster and tell you why they're all fucking great. I'm much more of a cynical, like, eh, look, they were fun. I'm still going to, you know, root for them, I guess, but Jesus. I'm not what you'd call a fan. And the same thing goes, like, I've still got my hatreds and I wear them very proudly on my sleeve. Like, I'm currently wearing a Philadelphia hat. That's a lot to just do with Ben Simmons because the rest of the time, Philly can go fuck themselves. But also, who else can go fuck themselves? The Lakers, the Knicks, the Celtics sometimes, the fucking Heat. I have a Miami Heat hat that I just, like, I'll walk down to the cafe. It's like, man, that's a sick hat. I'm like, yeah, man, I fucking hate the Heat, but I love this hat. Like, that's how it goes, right?
You know, my hatred sits with the Houston Rockets. I cannot watch them play.
It's a tough scene. It's tough. Like, I also just love Russell Westbrook because I feel like this is the contrarian turn, similar to where you'd be at, right? Where everybody is just fucking happy ragging on him. I'm like, to be fair, no one cares more than that guy ever about anything apart from when he's on a basketball court. Of course, he might care about getting a triple-double more than anything, but at the same time, that guy plays his fucking ass off, and that's all we ever ask. So,
I mean, he's a lightning rod for basketball fans. You just like, oh, man, because I agree with you. He hustles his ass off. At times, like when he was with Oklahoma, you kind of like, hey, you've got Durant, one of the greatest scorers.
Pass him the ball.
You give him the ball, get the fuck out of the way. And I've got a theory that they did it all wrong. To me, they should have traded Westbrook and just kept the rest of the nucleus because I think Harden and Durant and Ibaka would have worked way better together. Of course, because I think he's an Allen Iverson guy. I think he's surrounded by dudes and you just let him be a wrecking ball. But he's not. You almost need with that team someone to distribute the ball more. And that's not a slight on him because he's just a force of nature.
Yeah.
You kind of got to – he's got to be the central nucleus, not the person feeding the dude.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Harden Durant would have worked a million times better, I think, than Rusty and Durant. And it's a goddamn shame that the fucking franchise that's – well, the city that stole my team then shit the bed. I mean, it's not fucking karma or anything. I'm just saying, fucking whatever.
James, for you, I'll say go fuck themselves.
So who do you like this year? So once we actually, you know, presuming that we actually get back with our 22 teams in Orlando, in the bubble, even with players dropping out, literally, as we're talking, we've got the 22. Who do you reckon actually ends up on top? Who comes out with the title?
Man, so interesting, isn't it? Because you also think, well, then who stayed in shape? Because you're judging it off the players that were. And now you're like, well, you know, if you could, some guys, like they said, they haven't even touched a ball and stuff like this. You're like, oh, my God, what has happened there? Because, I mean, all the, you know, Milwaukee Clippers, Lakers, they're obviously the ones that were looking great. But I just can't, I don't know, because even the Lakers, like Avery Bradley decides that then he's not playing, which is fair enough. And you're like, okay, well, that changes things. And then I have to see how that – it's like the AFL season. You just like, I don't know. I don't know because I don't know who's still going to be a coherent team when this all kicks back off.
Yeah, I feel like the sort of whispers and rumblings that the Lakers have all been working out together anyway for like the last month or something in secret – has me fucking terrified that the Lakers are just going to come out and stomp everybody. But yeah, I'd much rather see like a Smokey come from nowhere, like Utah make a run to the finals out of fucking nowhere. And you're like, what? How is Joe Ingles now in the finals? This is fucking great. Or Dallas.
Yeah, that'd be sick. But I mean, I hate it because I remember the lockout season in 99 and now everyone's got an asterisk to that championship. Because like, yeah, but it wasn't real. You're like, well, then this is going to happen again. Whoever wins, I'll go, yeah, but it wasn't a real season. You're like, well, then you can't.
Well, they've already played more games than they did for that lockout season, and they'll end up playing more games than the 2012 lockout season, which no one really puts an asterisk on Miami for. So, you know, I feel like this entire year is going to have an asterisk, so I don't think it really fucking matters. I think we'll look back and go, oh, 2020, oh, yeah, that was fucked. Jeez. Can't believe they won. So I actually feel like, and this is going to be my NBA Australia point for fucking ages, if you win this season, I think it's actually more impressive than just winning a normal one. It's like you take a fucking like off season in the middle of the season, then you have to come back, play a shit ton of games in 3 fucking months, and you fucking won? Dude, that is bad fucking ass. Holy shit. So I think that's where I
stand. Yeah, I agree with you. Yep, that makes complete sense. It'll be interesting, the stress on people, like whether being in this little hub and without the travel and stuff, whether they can put up with it, or, as we all know, massive bodies aren't really good with a lot of work on them. It's not surprising that a lot of guys just crumble and fall to shit because you're 7'2". You shouldn't be that big.
Exactly. You just shouldn't. So who would you compare your basketball game to? A bit of Chris Bosh? I've already called my Jason Kidd just because I was a horrible shooter but enjoyed just passing, because that way there was no responsibility really on me whether or not the shot went in. So who do you think you have in your head where you're like, every time you step on the court, you're like, I'm fucking bang on this guy?
Well, now, I mean, mate, these days I'm like a 3 and D guy without a 3. It's just an old man who's doing all the shitty defensive things because it's not the same. I mean, I'm a lefty, so I always compare myself to kind of lefty dudes.
Chris Bosh, then, there you go.
Yeah, I'll take it. I mean, because I'm getting older, you just keep going up a position because you're getting slower.
So you're
I'm
like
now playing full front court center.
You're like a Toronto version Jalen Rose with the lefty.
Yeah. When I got back into it, when I got into my 30s playing with mates, like my shot was just off. I can handle okay, but it's just my shot was just atrocious. It's the whole point of the game is to put the ball in the hoop.
Nice one. And quickly, have you ever thought about re-upping your show with Ronnie Cheng, Double Dribble? For a little while there, you guys were basically the new iteration of Bill Woods and Steve Carfino. It was fucking gross. And you got to hang out with Gazy. Holy shit.
Oh, man. Talk about getting... What a lovely human being Andrew Gaze is. That's true. If anyone didn't see it, it was a 10-minute show on the World Championship of Basketball, which I think everyone gives zero fucks about. And so we were on ABC2. We were behind a green screen. It was like a hostage situation. But it was a bit of fun. We got to talk basketball. And then when Gazy got on, I started talking about, I swear to God, that dunk that always gets shown of Gaze when he was younger. That was at the arena. That was at the Supercuts. I was there when I saw the dunk. And so I reminded him of that and then asked him what it was like to play in Seton Hall when you're in the NCAA final against Michigan. And then I think he thought, well, this guy's for real. If you have memories of that. But yeah, man, what a lovely dude. Here's one thing with Gazy. People like to give him shit, but this is how much I just don't have a life. I was looking at old stats because new coming on here, I was like, was I right about that 89 season? I looked up old NBL stats. He led the league in like 34 points a game and like 7 or 8 assists. And if you tell people from overseas, I realized if you're going to compare him, he's like a taller Steph Curry. Like, you know, he was coming off picks, banging up from everywhere, taking like 3-4 foot out from the 3-point line. It wasn't like he was athletically gifted, and he'd say that. But you go, man, it was like that. Like he was just so solid with his basketball and his ability to score and move the ball.
He's like if you crossed Steph Curry and Tim Duncan, right? It's everything's fundamentally sound and he could shoot.
Yeah, and you just wish in a different era. I mean, he's 6'7". It's like, I can't believe the NBA was like, no, thanks. And you're like, man, surely now, I know he might have been quicker feet, but if you've got that kind of shooter, surely, and he's got the basketball now, but... Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's fine. Things have worked out, I guess.
I think he was all right in the end. All right, well, you've also got 2 kids. So now are you just like leaning into just all like Jim Gaffigan style, like all my comedy is now going to be dad stuff? What do you reckon? Because, I mean, that's all I talk about now too. It's just like basically this is dad Australia now, not NBA Australia.
Yeah, because it consumes you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, especially when they're young.
The mental energy you just expend thinking about it the entire fucking time. Just you're like, oh, how do I have time for anything else?
And that's how I explain it to friends. I said, you have to understand, kids, it's the same as heroin addicts. I said, you just, all of a sudden, you're just surrounded by old people that do it as well. Your place is a mess. You're like, in your sober moments, you're like, I got to get my old life back. But you are just in it.
But fuck, you first know? I got to steal this VCR. Yeah.
That's what it's like. You're on public transport, like just a couple of bucks, man. Just a couple of bucks. I just want a coffee. It's all I'm after. But Yeah, as much as you just got to talk about what's in front of you, man, and that's what's in front of me right now, which is a shit-stained house with nappies every which way.
And a lot of Brunswick talk as well in your bits, which is, you know, fun because I get to sit there and go, hey, that's where I live.
Yeah, mate, Brunswick represent.
So I guess finally, The Last Dance as well. I mean, what did you think about the 10 hours of Last Dance and I mean, we talked about this a little bit with Goxie, just talking about how the Australian media now just happily will just turn The Last Dance onto literally anything and anything Australian-wise. So here's why Shane Warner's MJ. Here's why Wayne Carey is The Last Dance. We're going to do a Dustin Martin Last Dance. It's like, would you fuck off? Like, that's all I'm doing now. But I mean, I feel like you're similar to, similar vintage as I am, where you would have been knowing everything that's going on. You've got broad strokes, but then this really dives into like all the crazy stuff and like Rodman fucking off to Vegas and Pippen constantly being fucking threatened with trades and everyone hating Jerry Krause and stuff, right? Like, we probably never got that inside source.
Yeah, I mean, it was so easy to be media manicured when it was our age. We got an hour a week and it just looked, Jordan looked perfect, the Bulls looked perfect. And that was also the era where he could say all the right things to media, which he always did, and you'd go, oh, this guy's, what is he, sent from heaven? This guy's amazing. And now, you know, they're not playing anymore. We live in a world where we want to know all the nuts and bolts. But I also, everyone said, oh, this is the real Jordan. I just think we got to see how the sausage was made.
Yeah.
It's like, you go, yeah, that's how you win six championships, by being obsessed with winning. That's how it happened. So I wasn't let down by it or changed my view of him. I was like, okay, he's intense. I kind of knew that. And, you know, there's certain things I liked about it. I liked it how they kind of – Kukoc was always painted as this weird outsider, and I didn't think they – I think they gave him his props because he was really skilled basketball. And it was weird because I was talking to my friend yesterday, Rana Hussein, who's on The Outer Sanctum, I believe, his podcasts, and she was she worked for the Richmond Football Club, and she was just saying she saw The Last Dance, and it kind of broke her heart because she said when she was growing up in Australia as a woman of colour and she loved sport, Jordan was this kind of like, oh, yeah, you know, someone who kind of looks like me and, you know, doesn't look like a white Australian, and they're doing all this cool stuff. And she goes, oh, so it kind of felt a bit hard that everyone was trying to now look for what's bad about him. And then I said, yeah, but after The Last Dance, I watched the Lance Armstrong documentary. And if you want to know how fucked up sociopathic white people can get to, you just watch that documentary, because Lance is way worse than Jordan. Lance is insane. don't you feel there was an objectivity about it? Jordan's like, yeah, I did that because that's, you know, that's what we did. That's how I rile people up. That's how I needed to get everyone focused. And he kind of could see why he would do it. Where Lance was like, yeah, I kind of regret having all those court cases against people who were telling the truth and I was blatantly lying, but now what are you going to do?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
but also,
man.
But was I really wrong? It's like, yes, Lance, you fucking were. What the fuck? Every goddamn time. Nice one. All right, Dave, this has been fucking great. So when do we get more There Will Be a Test?
Now, good question. COVID kind of put the brakes on it a little bit because it was hard to get people, and especially academics, which you completely understand, on the whole premise of the show. Is we get three comedians on the host, and then we get different people. You could come on as NBA, as your
there you go.
As you are the expert in your field, and we prod and poke them about their information, about what we got, and then at the end there is a test. But then to get six people in a room during COVID, to get people the time on board, it's all these spinning plates. So it's a shame. There's been more coming out, but it's just a bit hard to organise.
Nice one. Well, it's an amazing concept as well. So, like, it's a great listen. Like, you sort of just get stuck in your head and you're like, you're basically listening to a TV show, I feel like.
Yeah. It's funny because I think, and I mean this with love, it's kind of like a stupid man's version of QI. And I feel...
That's bang on, yeah.
Yeah, because Stephen Fry is such an intellect, QI runs off that. And because I'm not Stephen Fry, it runs off my intellect. So it patters at about the level you would expect of a kid from Geelong who studied TAFE and now is a stand-up comedian. So, yeah. So that's where it's at.
Nice one. All right. Well, here's hoping we get some stand-up gigs sometime this year, maybe in the future. Who fucking knows? At some point. Thanks a lot, Victoria. But either way, Dave Thornton, this has been fucking great. Thanks for coming on NBA Australia, man.
Thanks, man.
Hi, this is Ryan Brockoff, and you're listening to NBA Australia.
How good was that? Told you it was fun. Massive thanks to Dave Thornton for coming on. Great guest, great chat. Really enjoyed that. A lot of, like, there's actually more Geelong Ballarat talk, I think, that we had before and after. So it was pretty fun. But anyway, we'll have to get Dave back on, talk some playoffs, etc., when it's all going on, because that was really fun. Really, really enjoyed it. Make sure you subscribe to all of his podcasts and check him out on telly and go watch his specials and stuff. Follow him on Twitter as well. Make sure you're following NBA Australia on Twitter, Facey, IG. We're all over the socials all the time. You know that. Get around NBAAustralia.com. We do have some merch for sale at the moment. We're going to have more merch soon. Ooh, which would be fun. So go check that out, NBAAustralia.com/shop. Go buy a hoodie. Go on. Check us a rating review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever app you use on your Android phone. You've got nothing better to do. 10 suburbs are on lockdown. So if you're in one of those suburbs, you've got no excuse. But either way, help us out, would ya? Helps out heaps. Rate, review, do it. All right, big thanks to From Oslo for the intro and outro song. Go check out their new band, House Hats. Their album, Running Out of Time, is out now, and it's a rip snorter. Also, big thanks to Joshua De Laurentiis, Fascinator, Goldmines, Ramshackle Army, Iowa, Sex Jedi, Green, 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 and Dozers for all the tunes you hear throughout NBA Australia. Give them all a smash on Bandcamp and Facey and Triple J on Earth. Buy some of their merch. They can't play shows. So, look, support them the way they support us. Because remember, NBA Australia only supports Australian bands. All right, we'll close out this week's show with a new Deli review. He's back. How good's that? Pretty exciting. And we will catch you next week, you dickheads. We might do another video on Friday as well, some more yeah nahs. But in the meantime, this is NBA Australia saying, look after yourselves, would ya? And later, Zon! Oi, 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 how the fuck are you? It's Joe Mandeli over here, just swinging by from my latest Corona lockdown pop culture review, eh? And yeah, look, right off the bat, I just want to say I've not been on this show for the last few weeks because I've been so fucking angry about not going to fucking Disney World. I've, like, not barely spoken to fucking anyone, let alone watch some movies or telly to review for you. So, look, I mean, it's not even for fucking me, you know? Look. Sure, I'm fucking pissed I don't go to Disney World for a month and, like, ride the Pirates of the Caribbean with a few tins and shit under my belt. But look, the toughest part was telling my best mate, Don A, about it. Because, you know, like, Don A's still been staying with us after he got traded from Utah here to Cleveland. And, look, you should have just seen the look on the poor bugger's face when I broke the news that we weren't going to fucking Disney World. It'd break your fucking hat. I mean, so, I don't know. I told him, and since then, I've not seen him. He just went in the guest house and I reckon he's just been playing Fortnite the entire time. Hasn't even come out for, like, fucking a feed or anything. A bit worried. You know? A bit sad too. Anyway, so I'm slowly dealing with the fact that I don't get shit-faced and ride Space Mountain and stuff with my best mate LeBron. But, you know, having the little bloke around to put a smile on my doll helps. And the missus being like, oh, cheer up, you dickhead. You get to hang out with us even more. And I'm like, oh yeah, all right, I guess. So anyway, she figured out, to put me in a better mood, like the other night, we better watch that new Will Ferrell movie. Hey, I fucking, you know me, I fucking love Will Ferrell. So I'm like, oh yeah, fucking bang on, let's go. Get a couple of tins, sit down, pop on the couch, fang it on, and it's like Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Ah, to be funny anyway. So, yeah, I watched it. And I'm like, oh, there's Will Ferrell. Look at him. He's got long hair and, you know, he's in funny costumes and he's in a cold place. Hang on. Isn't this just fucking Blades of Glory? But we're singing? What? Jeez. So, yeah, like, I don't know. There's a funny Russian bloke and Rachel McAdams is his partner and they're in Iceland and they make it to Eurovision, I guess. And, like, yeah, and there's lots of singers and shit, like, that I don't know, I guess, in it, and some stuff in there I guess you have to know about Eurovision to find funny, I suppose. Yeah. So, look, to be honest, I've seen funnier episodes of Hey Hey, It's Saturday, but still, it is Will Ferrell with long hair and wearing funny costumes and shit, so it still gets about 12 out of 10 deli ones, you know what I'm saying? So, look, I guess if you want to have a bit of a laugh, watch Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. But, to be honest, I reckon I've had more laughs on a Friday night fanging around Maribor and my best mate Pluggers lowered VK Commodore yelling shit at dickheads we went to high school with on the street, eh? So, don't see me making a fucking movie out of that. Anyway, so look, there you go. 12 out of 10 deli ones for Eurovision Song Contest, The Story of Fire Saga. It's all right. Yeah, okay. That's it for me for this week then. I'll be back next week with another pop culture review for you. Until then, I reckon, later fuckos. Deli out.